I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. Boom, 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 boom. So you wanna be a rider? Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Red Room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest, and you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room. We keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, everybody? Wakanda forever. We brought it back.
We brought it back.
Yay.
We brought it back because we don't have a new one yet.
So I'll keep it.
It's always going to be.
Exactly.
Hey, can I say something real quick?
Can I?
Okay, go ahead.
Finish the intro. This happened right here.
Go ahead.
Y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture. But our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. Yes, you hear her. Lisa Bolakaja is back.
It's three in a row, right? It's three in a row?
Yeah, interrupting folks.
Shit, three
she
in a row.
She must be on summer vacation or some shit. You know, until she takes off and go to Italy or something. Don't tell nobody, you know. She's just going to disappear on the brother.
Gets lost.
What you was going to say?
On a tramp steamer somewhere. I mean, what the hell?
I'll have to share the link on the thing, but it's one of my Twitter peeps on there, and we were making fun of, I don't know if you guys saw that meme that went around and went viral, where they were putting like acrylics on all the superheroes and like the bonnets and stuff. And so the girl who started it, she's fabulous. And I'm sorry, love, I can't remember your handle, but anyway, she kind of hangs around on Twitter, the same kind of people that I kind of follow and kind of follow around with. But she went to like the recent event, the fan out event where Chris Evans was, and she actually took a picture. And she was saying, should we tell him, you know, that I was the one that started that thing? And she did. She took a picture of him with him together. And then she took the picture and put acrylics on the picture of her and him together with the bonnet.
That's funny.
And the thing that was so funny about it was just something like typical black girl stuff. Just like, you know, the stuff that we do, the acrylic nails, and everybody know what a bonnet is, or you're getting your hair wrapped and doing some things. And it was just like that kind of like black girl magic. And like, I think Don Cheadle shouted it out and said, oh, thank Black Twitter for that, you know, the whole acrylics thing. So I just want to shout that out. It was just hilarious. It was like a fun thing that kind of went viral.
And we need some more fun shit.
And I did, because they even said, and I even suggested, this is how fast Twitter is, because I even said, oh my God, I'm crying laughing at this thing. And I said, I need somebody to put Nick Fury and some Patti LaBelle hair from the 80s. 10 minutes later, one of the people was following, they put it up there, and I was crying. Somebody else had put him in some Marcel finger waves with the acrylics. And I thought, this is the type of content that I sign up for. So it was a nice, funny thing, and I was like, oh my God, black people are amazing.
Right.
Just wanted to share that.
That's
just wanted to share that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got my man, Chris Derrick, in the house. What it do, Chris?
Not much, just doing today.
Yeah, he's like living day by day.
Listen, we were given energy. We was up here. Hi. You tossed it over.
Pass the ball.
It's called contrast. You gotta have contrast in everything you do, or you get bland. It's that simple.
Sound like an old Negro.
The
camera has panned from the house Negroes and gone out to the fields now, and he's like, what was me out here?
Let me tell you what's
just
going
surviving.
On. Today we're gonna do no. I just
Lisa said you're supposed to pass the Dutchie from the left hand side.
From the left hand side.
No, I'm just, you know, just
oh man,
I don't know. I've been kind of in a weird space the last week or so. My head's going crazy.
We all do that.
I hear you.
Yeah,
we all do that.
I had like a good couple meetings this week.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Did you guys see that tweet I put out the other day?
Yeah.
You saw it. Well, you saw it.
Well, yeah.
But I was talking about, this just might translate. I was talking about, so I was just sitting here in the office, and I was working on, you know, the big project I'm working on. And I was like, all of a sudden, I started freaking out. About. I mean, just like, you know, I mean, I hardly ever do. Suddenly, all of a sudden, I was like, oh, shit. Like, I got to go in and pitch this thing like in a couple of weeks. Like it just occurred to me the realism of all that shit. And so I just, and you know me, I hardly ever tweet things, hardly ever. Mm-hmm. And I just tweeted how I felt at the time and got like a ton of responses back. Mm-hmm. In essence, I was saying, I'm working on this big project for these big producers, and I'm realizing that I'm kind of scared and excited at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I said, but then also I'm realizing that's when I know it's right.
Yeah, that's a good space to be in.
When you have the fear
yep.
and the excitement
well,
at the same time.
Yeah, there's a good fear you have to right. embrace when you're writing or doing anything creative. Mm-hmm. I think if you...
It keeps you kind of hungry.
Well,
if you think
yeah, mm-hmm. but I think if you feel comfortable about it, then you... I don't know if you can really turn the right critical eye in your own work if you're comfortable about
right,
it.
Right.
If you're unsure, mm-hmm. like, is this fucking good? I don't know yet. Then it kind of puts you in a position of, like, you focus more. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of the things that, like... where you want to like keep striving the projects that you do is to stay on that as if you don't feel comfortable yeah. in what you're doing. I mean, like the project I'm working on now, like the film mm-hmm. I'm working on, it's like some of it's scary because I'm like, fuck, like this is, I don't know how to do this. Mm. I'm doing something I haven't seen. I mean, I've seen a few people do it.
So you're challenging yourself.
It's challenge, yeah. Right. And there's a fear because it's like, I don't know how, because you don't rely, because you can't fall back on things that you know how to do
right.
well. That you like learn, oh, I know how to do this really well. Not this time, because mm-hmm. I don't know how to do it, because I've never done this before. Right. You know, and it's exciting. And like and the project that I'm working on is like, it's just a lot, there's so many moving parts in it. And, you know, it's multi-genre thing. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, you know, when I'm like doing something, I'm jumping around through the different storylines. And it's like, how do I keep the genre right? Okay, I'm in the sci-fi one now. Oh, now mm-hmm. I'm in the romance. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so my head is like, it's
a puzzle.
It's a real puzzle. Yeah. You know, I was listening to Brian Copelson's thing, The mm-hmm. Moment, the other day, and he had
everybody should be listening to Brian.
And he,
I love
and
him.
There was a replay of the episode with Tony Gilroy, and as you know, a big fan, you
yes,
fan. And
Sir Tony Gilroy.
And he was talking about, he was like, look, you know, the thing about screenwriting is, once you kind of get the creative idea, mm-hmm. it's math. And he was like, because you're trying to solve a problem,
right.
like he's gonna go here. Well, and if he does that, then she's gonna do this, this, and this. She right. can't do this. She can't do this because if we go here and here, then it's gonna lead to the wrong thing. So he kind of equated to a math problem, and I thought that was an interesting way to look at mm-hmm. like actual
screenwriting is mathematics. You
know, yeah, I thought that's mm-hmm. strange, but, mm-hmm.
But you know what's funny though? I've been listening to this podcast, and the writer is, which you would love.
I don't know this one.
It's fucking brilliant. And he sets it up at the beginning where. Like say you're an artist, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm a songwriter. So you come into the studio for like the first hour, like we do in the writer's room. We just start talking about your life or what you've been up to, you know, the parties you're doing or whatever the fuck. And, he was talking about, there was some big hit he wrote. He was talking about how the artist came into the studio. She had a hangover and she was talking about like some bullshit that just happened with this guy, whatever. And he was like, oh, that's a good line. You know what I mean? Mm. And they built off of that, and it was one of the biggest, like, number one hits, like, last
nice.
Year, right?
Nice.
And so I'm saying that to say that this podcast, Chris, you would enjoy because he interviews all of these songwriters, and they all talk about it from the point of view of story. Mm. You know what I mean? And where where the story comes from. And it could just be a word. It could be, you know, like they were just shooting the shit. And his mom said that they were interviewing this big country singer. And his mom said some line to him about, you know, that they always give you some whys, whatever. Mm-hmm. But the way she said it is something we've actually heard before. Mm-hmm. But it's like some country little addition
okay.
to
okay.
it. And I was like, almost like, don't put the gravy in the yada, 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 like some shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But... he turned that around into a theme that became an anthem. You know what
okay.
I mean? Just in little shit, but it's about listening to words or listening to phrases and stuff and finding the facts.
Oh, you have to do you that. You have. I mean, just, you know what? The other day I was just scanning through, because of the debates, right?
Right.
You know, and...
you watched that shit?
No.
I watched it.
I didn't watch the debate.
It was hilarious.
Some of it was funny, but I was scanning through Twitter when it was on, because I always
right.
see people. Sometimes people
right.
react, and it's like some of the comments that people say are such fascinating lines. And I was like, I'm going to scribble all this down. Because if someone said this in a movie, you'd fucking laugh. Because I laugh out loud. I was like, who the fuck would say that? And I was like, but it's you know, it just, I don't know, it's interesting stuff. No, I mean, like, I agree with you about, like, that's the interesting thing about you bring up country music. Because country music, we talked about this before offline a lot. There's such great, fascinating story. Like they're probably the best storytellers. Like
song-wise. Because they have so much rules in it.
Yeah,
it's like being on a network show compared to cable. Yeah. Like there's a reason why they can have a procedural show run for 50 years,
right.
And a cable show can only go for 4 seasons.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm. If you throw it all in the pot, you're like, we run out of story.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. So it has a little similarity where the rules apply to keep you online.
Right. Yeah, there's the link. There's a podcast I listen to called, what the fuck's this guy's name? Malcolm Gladwell has a podcast. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what it's called. I'll find out, put a link on it. But he did an episode of where he compared, it was kind of like, it's called like the saddest song in the world or something like that. Mm. And he compared like these songs from like Tom Petty and like and Rolling Stone, some of these Rolling Stone songs from the 60s, huge hits about this you know, like this just tragic love. And he's like, and look at this, there's only like there's only so many words here, and the refrain is a lot and blah blah blah, and that's like most of the song. He was like, here's this country song. And he went in and it was like this, and like and every line is like this stab to the gut or stab to the back. And I was like, fuck, like that's deep. That's real pain in the writing. And I think
you have to be really trans. I know this isn't the conversation, but we just, there's a rant room. You have to be really transparent when you're writing something like let's translate this to screenwriting. I was just talking to a writer the other day who was working on this bio story, and she was really fuck is that noise? Why y'all making all this noise in here?
It's a bell outside.
She was really attached to a lot of the things that really happen. And we've had lots of discussion that you have to have license within stories and whatever, right? And the thing for me is you always have to give yourself room, right, to whatever may have happened in real life may have been sounded interesting to you. But if you don't see it on the screen as an audience member, is it interesting to the audience? You know what I mean? Because you might be like, oh, well, but that's what happened. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm bored. You know, I'm looking at this on the screen. I'm not just reading it in your script. I'm looking at it.
Exactly. Because the thing about events in people's lives are, particularly these biopics, and like we both noticed because we've gone through this so much, is that there are events that are fucking cool because they're interesting revelations about someone.
Mm. Right.
But that doesn't mean they're like dramatically interesting to watch, and that's why, and that's where a lot of biopics stumble, because they show you things that somebody thought was, and they are cool moments. They're like, fuck, that's like, it's a cool moment.
It's keyword moment.
But that's not a dramatic moment, just because it's, and that's why you get bored, because then it's like you're just showing me something, you know, and that's kind of where the difference is when you watch kind of like a bio pic versus like a documentary. Is that in the documentary, the thing that really makes when they just talk about things interesting is it might be the real person who's telling you that, you know, and that person who's now showing a sense of vulnerability about them, about their own life in retrospect. That's what's fascinating and connecting. But that's not interesting if I just saw it and it's like, you know, it's some actor playing that role, because it's not enough. Not enough. Well,
one of the things that I always find that always comes about is when somebody is specifically like younger writers, when, because I stopped saying baby writers, by the way, I hate the word now.
Thank you.
Hate it.
I appreciate it.
Younger writers tend to, because you hear, you should write the thing that you know. So what you usually do is you write, oh, well, I grew up this way. Mm. You know, which usually, I'm going to write a TV script about a young lady who moved from New York to become a writer, to become an actress. I'm like, no, but we've seen this script 9 million times. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Well, everybody writes.
That's not what we're talking about. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is what's the story within you that nobody else knows about, right? What's that thing? Like, for example, my first script was Rebel Yell about the skinheads. People didn't know the skinheads weren't racist at first. Mm-hmm. So I was like, let me tell that story.
Right.
Right? So So instead of going, oh, let me write this story about how I moved to LA and became an actor. Like, no, bitch, we've seen that story. Right. You know what I mean? So that's what I'm saying. Find the story within the story that's interesting, not just the one that's on the nose. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I've... By the way, it's just Sonny. Yes, hi.
There it is.
Ah, ends everything.
I have to announce myself. I think because I was thinking about that too, because I think I talked about it another time, I think right. with you, Hilliard, about story and the stories we have inside, and like, do we write what we know, and what if I don't, what I know isn't as much. Mm-hmm. But I was interesting because I recently was doing a sales and marketing position yeah. where I was like struggling with my leader, and thank you. This is service, everyone. Y'all didn't see it. I was struggling with my leader, and I realized like, it's funny, it was like a revelation I felt about myself. Mm-hmm. And within that revelation, and I want to be specific, but I don't remember.
Did Prince show up in his spirit?
Prince.
You had a revelation, didn't you?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then we did a dance together. I was like, Prince, don't go. And then he left. And then I had a revelation.
I think he lied like Tupac. Okay. So.
Yes. But as soon as I got it, I came up with a story around it. Mm-hmm. Ooh, yes. It was about, I realized one day that I was entitled. And I didn't know that. Yeah, it was an interesting revelation.
You are a millennial, bitch. Of course you think you're that.
Well, you know what? I was born in New York, so I always held that. Like, I'm not like LA people. Turns out I am. Sad
twist.
Day.
I am.
I'm just like them. So, I was like, I want to write a story about someone who thinks they deserve something. They're going to get something because of who they are. Hmm. But realizes that someone who worked harder and did more behind the scenes work overtopples them at that moment where they're like, okay, this is mine, and they're about to get a prize. So I end up making like a middle age story about a king, a prince who's like, I'm gonna be king, and da 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 da. And then his sister like turned the whole town against him basically and had this whole plot going. And as soon as the father died, she was like, now I'm queen, and this is why.
Sounds okay. Very Shakespearean.
You're banished to the kingdom.
Yeah.
Banished.
And I use the fact that what I know is that learning about myself and learning that I'm entitled, and I used that, and it just went
I like
magical.
That. That's mm-hmm. good.
Yeah.
Well, see, well, you know.
Okay.
Hold on, y'all. Hold on.
I love it.
Keep your thought, Chris. Y'all missed it. Matter of fact, you need to keep that going because I feel
okay.
like just how he just pulled out an Asian fan and just started.
He made his comments. And it went. Doop. Apparently in church now, y'all. We in church.
What were you saying, Chris?
Mm-hmm.
What was I saying? So you know, it's such bad advice to say write what you know, because the people who teach that, they leave it at that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they know that they mean
that's not what they mean.
That, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, right. and it's like they're so, and they've been in such positions of like academia. Hear a lot, you know, when you're taking writing classes, and that they don't realize that they need to unpack that. I hate saying that word. That's why
I actually don't hate it in this context.
They
well, what are you looking for there? But that makes sense.
No. They need to like explain what they mean and detail it out.
Okay.
Because it doesn't make sense. So anyway, but it's just my own pet peeve about that word. But so
we all have words we don't like. Those.
There's so many. I just
unravel.
Not even. No,
Stacey,
it's fine.
Pour out. What you think?
What's the word?
Give us a word.
Yeah. No. So what I'm saying is because what you're passionate about, mm-hmm. and everyone who's creative or wants or thinks they're creative is passionate about something.
Right.
What happens is you have maybe been doing something for, I don't know, 5, 10 years, something like that, that you've been really passionate about, mm-hmm. that you no longer see that as interesting from the point of view of what someone else finds interesting, because something you're into. So it's the personal familiarity that you have makes it less fascinating to you. But the reason why you got into it in the first place is because it was fascinating to you. And that's what you can write about. That's or that's what you might paint. You know, it's like there's this woman that I know She's a photographer, and she does these really interesting photographs that are just, they're photographs of door handles and door locks. And that doesn't seem interesting at all, right?
That is totally interesting.
I
want to
say it sounds interesting to me.
But
I'm a weirdo.
Yeah, but to a certain degree. So I went to this photo exhibit. She had these things, and the thing is that they're so close ups and macro photography thing, and it's kind of images repeated and sliced up that when you look at it, you don't really know what it is. And she was like, "Okay, can you guess what it is?" And I was like, I had to look at it for a while, and I was like, that looks kind of like a door handle. She's like, exactly. And I was like, and so, but it looked weird. I was like, so what'd you shoot this? She was like, I was out in Argentina one time for vacation, and I noticed all these interesting, the way their doors are different than ours. Right. So I just photographed those, and I go down there and I photograph them constantly, and I build them up. And these, her paintings are like, you know, they're like these 10-foot tall things, and she does photographs these installations. So you wouldn't look at it and say, oh, it's just a doorknob. She like pushes it so in this abstract space, and it's like, and that's what keeps it fascinating to her. but she elevated it, right. And that's what it is. You got to find this idea that you some little trick you found in the world and elevate it to this position that other people will find it like, right. What the fuck is that?
What you think?
Speaking of elevated, which brings me to our topic.
Shit. We put the brakes on all this. We put the brakes on.
No, because I'm sitting here like, okay, let me jump in here.
Let's turn the page real quick.
Back to me.
No,
not even a clean transition.
Speaking of elevated.
No, but it was a perk because he said the word elevated, and it fits in perfectly with the thing. But,
okay.
I can go back. Speaking of elevated. So last Thursday, I went out to the Writers Guild to go hang out and eat some nice food and have some nice libations. And apparently they were having a panel there too.
Damn.
No, because you know, when I go places, the first thing I always say, where there be food and libations? Because you know, I'm busy, I do stuff, and it's like, oh, I gotta get food and stuff. So whenever I come out to do anything out of my shell, it's like, where there be food? Yeah. So anyway, I was coming anyway because Hilliard was on a panel for the LGBTQ and genre writers committees came together and put a panel called Super Queerios, LGBTQ plus writers giving a voice to the hero in all of us. And basically the panel was talking about how now we have all these different TV shows and movies and things that are coming out that are basically, for the first time in a long time, giving queer and gay characters agency, storylines, in TV shows, right. Where they're not the little side character, they're not being killed off, killing all your gays, you know, and doing terrible things, and not making them being the plot of a joke, not being made fun of, where they have their own lives and their own things. So I came to check it out, and I want to talk about that, because one of the things that's interesting is, you know, Hilliard being one of the few gay black male genre writers out in the game right now, I really want us to talk about that, because it's kind of like when we talk about marginalized groups getting into writing and writing their stories and making sure their voices are heard. You know, gay voices are one of those ones that always, you know, no matter what other, you know, marginalized thing that's going on, when we bring up sexuality, people get the heebie-jeebies, like, oh, you know, we can't show that on TV. Yeah, yeah. Dude, you got murders and heads exploding,
but we can't take two people,
you know, not even that. They're holding hands, and they're in a house, and they have a child, and what is this? What is this satanic thing? You know, it's so over-the-top crazy. And
is it though real?
And on that panel, they happen to have Emilia Ortega Aldrich, who's one of the co-producers on Arrow. They had Tom Farrell, who's an executive story editor on DC's Universes of Doom Patrol, and they also had Drew Greenberg, who's
the OG,
who's a writer and producer on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So they were on the panel with Hilliard.
He goes back to Buffy and Shinder?
Oh, God, way back in the day. Yes. And, you know, and Buffy and all that stuff was one of the few shows that were coming out, especially, and we're talking in particular, you know, genre shows, where, you know, you had queer characters. But a lot of times back in those days, too, it was kind of like, not explicit, but kind of implied, like, oh, they could be, the, you know, or that's my roommate person, so, you know, my friend on the side, that kind of thing. But now we're getting to a point where they can be front and center. And, of course, with the brand new, and I forgot, there was the other young lady who's writing for the new, the Batgirl TV show.
I forgot she wasn't in there.
Right, she wasn't in the panel. So, sorry, what's her name again?
I want to say Nancy Hsu.
Okay, so like Nancy, apologies. Your name's not in the... I have the program for the thing. So, and she's writing on the brand new Batgirl TV show. And in case you didn't know, Batgirl's bisexual. And what I like about
it... I thought she was just a lesbian.
I don't know. I've always read her as being bisexual.
Yeah, I thought she was going to be a lesbian in it too.
Kane, she might be.
I think.
Kane, yeah. But,
well, I'm going from the comics.
Okay. Yeah, I'm talking about the comics. Right. Yeah, the comics, yeah.
But the TV show, we'll see. I think they might just have her just be gay. Right. I'll have to check. You guys can always let me know and verify. But the point is... It's a superhero character, the main character, so you know you can't kill this bitch off. Because the show is called Batgirl. Right. And if you kill her, like, we're killing our gays.
You can break her back.
It's just going to be her, it's just gonna be her motorcycle driving by itself.
Nancy Kiyo.
Hi, Nancy. K-I-U. So, hi, Nancy Kiyo. So, yeah, and so, you know, so they're talking about these new characters that are on TV shows now who are having their own world, their own space, their own agency. And I kind of wanted to talk about that because it's important. We talk about being seen, representation, and all of that. I'm just curious to know, you know, your thoughts. And Jasan, you can jump into just, you know.
Hell yeah.
Just, to me it's exciting. To me it's exciting, but I think the pushback is when people start getting caught up in sex. It's kind of like when we talked about our other episode on Striking Vipers, and just like I was telling you, it was like, that episode brought out so much conversations in people. Right. It was weird, and I'm like, but you weren't tripping. It was Black Mirror. You weren't tripping when the first episode of the first season was a dude fucking a pig.
Exactly.
Y'all didn't really say nothing about that too much, you know. Like, in fact, that was the litmus test. That was the litmus test to see if he's going to continue on with the show. But other than that, there's no brouhaha. But to have, you know, characters that could or may be gay or sexual, that kind of thing, it was like, oh my gosh.
I have a theory.
What's your theory, sir?
Here's my theory.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do it like just saying.
Okay.
Yeah. So... Do it.
I have a theory. I was thinking that the reason, because it used to be that Black people were the first people to get killed off on a TV show or on a movie, whatever the fuck. And here, I always thought this is why. Whether it be a movie or a TV show, usually the straight leads, right, or the white leads are usually the ones who are a couple. They're the ones who are in love. They're the ones who have the compassion for each other. So you have to, I hate to say the word, like them, you know, or relate to them in some way, where the other characters are just, you know.
They're support. Foils. They're
right.
Foils.
Right. Exactly. Right.
I mean, just, let me finish my thing.
Yeah. Right.
And so what happens is, I think, let's take a TV show, for example. Why I think it's easier for the room to kill off a gay character or a Black character because we haven't went home with them yet. We only see them at work for the most part, at the school, whatever the situation is. So we haven't really spent time loving them the way that they do some of the other characters. Us as fans love them because we have a Black character, we have a gay character, we have a whatever, LGBT character. Not because we've fallen in love with them, because they've given them agency in some way. Right. Not always.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just we're so excited to have one
right.
that we root for them immediately. You know, like I was telling somebody the other day about, like, I'm a huge boxing and Chris knows, UFC fan. I'm the type of dude, I'll watch two guys and I don't know who they are. So I immediately want the Black guy to win. I'm just going to keep it real with y'all. But if the Black dude is a dick and showing off and doing all that Mayweather shit, I immediately want the Latino guy to win or the white guy to win or whatever. I immediately go, no, dude, you lost me. I don't like all that showing off. I'm like, whip his ass. You know what I mean? Yeah. So we naturally have a bias inside of us, right?
Mm.
But it can turn if you... To me, they become more likable when they're getting their ass beat.
Well, I feel like
if
now...
that makes sense?
Yeah. I feel like now we kind of get to this point. Like, we get to these little plateaus. For example, if we talk about Black characters, for a while there, it was like, yay, Black characters, we're on TV. Now, if you grew up in the 70s, 80s, you were just happy to see a Black person. Right. even if they were terribly written, mm-hmm. we were just so happy to see them on there. Right. Now we reached a point now where it's not acceptable. It's not acceptable for me personally to have the one token black person. It's not acceptable to have, you know, one type of black person, the ambiguously light-skinned, could be comfortable, you know. What you're really doing is you want to create characters that white people want to sleep with and be with. Yeah. And you do not show the spectrum of melanin all over the place. I mean, there's heat right now talking about Marvel supposedly looking at, you know, casting what's a girl from who's a great actor from Game of Thrones as the new Storm. And it's like, okay, Storm canonically has been darker skinned. We haven't had a dark skinned actress play that role yet. And it's about time. Mm-hmm. So before, we were happy when Halle Berry was in it. We was like, yay, because I'm telling you why. It was a black person. Right. And we like this black person. And
who from Game of Thrones are you talking about?
The girl one played
black,
Melisandre?
The only black female actress.
Yeah, the
that
girl
was
played
on
Melisandre.
Oh, yeah. She's supposed to be Storm.
There are rumors talking about
why are they. Okay. You know
casting.
What?
I'm just talking Storm. Casting.
Jeez, motherfuckers!
They're
Marvel
rebooting
to stop
again. The talk is rebooting again and recasting, and X-Men is just, okay. I'm just going to say it, and I'm going to hurt some people's feelings. The X-Men series, the new reboots, they're not good. No. You don't stack up. And I'm going to tell you why it's
everybody's
not good.
In blue.
I'm going to tell you why.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm going to tell you why. Listen, I'm going to tell you why. And it's a small piddling thing, but it's a huge thing because you know my theory. Right. It's casting. Y'all cast wrong. Mm. And if you cast ain't right, I don't care how good the script is. My petty ass is going to be sitting there going, you know what? This would have been so much better if you would have just put Angela Bassett or so-and-so, damn, whoever, ooh, whoever, yes, in the character. So that's a whole nother story. But anywho, the whole idea is when you have these black... Now, the same thing is happening with gay characters. Before, we had a little sprinkling of gay characters here and there. But now, that's not good enough anymore. Now, we want them center stage. We want to see their life. Like you said, we want to go home with them. Yeah. I think that was why it was so pivotal for the first time that we ever saw, like, especially for black characters on This Is Us, where Sterling K. Brown, my husband in another universe... sorry, Miss Michelle, his wife. That's just how it is. I'm just sorry. When his daughter, you know, came out to them on the show. And it wasn't like this big, dramatic, you know, ABC, you know, special, big thing. It was like a normal conversation of, this is how I'm feeling. And the parents were it wasn't a weird thing. It was a normal... This is what's going on. This is how I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. Kind of support. And you don't really see that, especially with black characters and gay characters. But now we're seeing more, especially with the genre shows, more center stage, more agency.
I have a question about
more
this.
Not being tossed to the side. And my thing is now, I'm just really curious to know what the pushback's going to be. Because I promise you people, in your life, when you go out in your day, probably about more than half the people you run into are gay.
In this city.
And normal, doing your business, it's not a big thing.
Right.
But because the powers that be are controlling the narrative and we're not seeing these characters.
But it's the same thing. It's the same thing. Keep your thought, Chris. It's the same thing with what they, like, I go to the gym and I park in the garage, and you've been there. I park in the garage. And then I walk across the street. But in the garage, I always get on. There's always some white lady getting, and I could see them like
tense.
Me. Really, I'm like, do I look like I'm some whatever?
But, and then you grab the purse. So, just to fuck with her. And you make that jerk move. So
I consciously will say something nice. I'll consciously like, oh, you go first.
Right.
Whatever, to make them feel like we all are in a threat. Mm. So I'm saying that to say.
But that's so much mental work. White people don't ever have to do that.
Exactly. They don't have to worry about that shit at all.
Should I do when I go to the store? Like when I'm looking at stuff, I'm very, and it's true. And it may become, we might be that last generation that has to like, don't put yourself.
But
I'm in the store, like, I gotta make sure, I'm getting on my phone. I'm not stuffing in something to steal.
Yeah.
I'm taking out my cell phone to ask my mother, is this the right type of seasoning you want, because bitch, if I come to the house and it's not the right one, I'm not going back out again. So you need to let me know. But I have to use the mental energy to stop myself, to be like, let me be very demonstrative to show that I'm not putting the seasoning in my car, even though you just saw me on my American Express car buying a whole bunch of shit a second ago. Right. It's a lot of mental work that other people don't have to do.
Well, I was going to say two things. Like, one, I'm curious to the scene that you're talking about in This Is Us.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious to know how that scene plays if the family circumstances are different. See, it's very interesting that you have that.
If they're not like an upper middle class.
No. It's the fact that Sterling K. Brown, he grew up around a white family. They had to do a lot to kind of like, if you watch that show, I only watched part of the first season.
Yeah, me too.
Like they had to do a lot in the, they were showing in the when they were a kid to try to like make him feel integrated and safe and to, mm-hmm. and to open up and to open up the family structure to be a lot more accepting of things. Right. So it makes sense that he would then be able to be that way with his own child. But if you flip it around and that's not his upbringing, mm-hmm. you know, and then you have that conversation with the daughter saying that, then what's that scene like? That could be interesting.
Well, that's actually mm-hmm. interesting.
But like, who knows?
Mm-hmm. Like his parents accepted him no matter what.
Right.
You know, having a black kid in their family.
They better had you raising the child if he
was all that
you got
show.
Issues. You adopted
him. But that's interesting that it could possibly make him have this. My parents accepted
more empathy.
Me for whatever. Mm-hmm. I could accept
this. This is what it is.
I remember in this isn't a spoiler alert because it's been going on for 4 seasons now, whatever. But I remember there was an episode, and I want to say it was in season 1. I can't remember where. The brother, the actor guy,
mm-hmm.
thinks that Sterling's getting all the attention from the mom, and they do this flashback.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. They do this flashback of him actually realizing that his mom had put him a bed, and she actually came back and put him the bed. He didn't remember that she did that.
Right.
You know what I mean? He thought it was always about Sterling. And but she actually did come back and put him the bed, too.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it was, but it was this beautiful, like, thing it's that the, he had
well,
to
it's,
realize.
It's interesting too because again, it's like you say to yourself. That's, I mean, that was I thought was a great scene. I know the scene you're talking about, guys,
right.
Because it's like you're an actor.
Mm-hmm.
An actor is craving some sort of like external ego stroke constantly. That's part of the reason why they are actors and they want all that kind of praise. But they're also
writers too.
But the thing is that they're blind because if your ego is a little overactive, you'd be blind to those kind of choices that are happening to you.
Right.
That are, oh yeah, you know what, the mom is giving you something, mm-hmm. but all that matters to you is I'm not getting all of it,
mm-hmm.
and that's where the ego thing gets away. The second thing I was going to say is, you were talking about. Oh, here's the thing. You were saying, okay, it's the white woman and the thing, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but you know what? I've had that happen to me with, mm-hmm. like, hold on, from, like, Asian people.
Yeah, same thing.
So it's not necessarily a thing where you're saying, where it's like, well, this is the last generation where blacks have to do that for whites. It's like, the global, it's like,
well, global anti-blackness is real,
yes,
anyway.
Yes,
so
that's what it is.
Falls under everybody else.
It doesn't matter like where you are,
and if you're in this country,
that's what the media has basically done has painted us. Like I was telling someone this the other day about, mm-hmm. like someone's asking me about like, you know, like why I should be the one to tell this story I'm working on. I was, mm-hmm. like, let me tell you something. Black people, based upon how the way the media has portrayed us. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be rejoicing anything about us because we look like some dangerous animals in the global media type of situation,
right. Mm-hmm.
and it behooves us to be able to tell our stories in a way that so that we're not like always being depicted that way through your lens of like this anti-black lens.
Right.
And the thing about the anti-black lens is that even if you're someone who's woke and white, then you're still trying to like disarm that anti-blackness that you know is floating around,
right.
as opposed to just telling the story as what happened because this is a black person and this is another black person.
Right.
Just this.
Did
you
guys see the thing from Denzel? When he was being interviewed.
The AFI?
Yeah.
I didn't watch
and,
it,
and somebody,
at
his, and give me all the corrections, but I'm paraphrasing. Somebody asked him a question about, like, why some films should be directed by, like, black directors or whatever. And he said, no, they should be. And he gave the reference back to who did Godfather, where I'm going blank on that.
Coppola.
Oh, Battalion hadn't done that?
Yeah, but he was saying that all the previous movies before that were done by, like, Jewish guys or whatever, something like that. So they were missing nuance. That's what he said. He said it's about
nuance, yep.
And actually, it was really brilliant, I thought, how he broke it down. You guys should all look that up. We probably should put that in the show notes for people who haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's brilliant. And you remember, give me the rest of it. I don't remember what else.
Oh, I just saw, like, I just only saw a short clipping.
It was
a small short clip, so I couldn't even give you more detail. But I just remember, like, yeah, there's a certain, and it doesn't mean that people can't attempt to tell their story, their version of it, but in terms of richness, in terms of it having that emotional impact, because we talked about this on another episode where when we go to the movies, the mm-hmm. things that makes the movie hit for so many of us is that the emotional connection. When we leave there, we feel like we fucking felt something, right, you know, right, and it makes you think about your own life. And that's what a movie should do, you know, unlike some movies I saw where I sat there and I was upset. Men in Black. And yeah, I said it.
You're Men in Black.
Men in Black. And I did.
You know? Do?
I don't know how it did, but I can see why it didn't.
Wait, what did you say?
Men in Black International.
Oh, that it flopped?
I don't know. Well, I don't know if it flopped.
No.
I'm just saying when I went to go see it.
Let me tell you why that movie flopped. Because
we've seen it before. And number two, the casting was bad. I loved Tessa and Chris, mm-hmm. but the rest of the cast, like really? Their bad guys and all the other stuff, they weren't bad enough. Mm. Two, the person that they have for the one of the, I forget the actress's name, but she was so boring. And then we've seen those aliens before. They didn't mm-hmm. show me aliens that were different than before, and it wasn't anything new or fresh. Mm-hmm. Like, it was cutesy. They have kind of good chemistry, but the writing of it, the storyline, what mm-hmm. they're doing, it was just, you know, his character was bland. Hers was cute, but didn't have anything to push back on. And I sat there being disappointed because I needed a summer movie that would have an impact, that would make me feel good, and it how I felt.
Okay, this is my thing about that movie, about that, the weekend that movie came out, because somehow the people who were doing these numbers and these expectations were, I think, that movie like was going to do well. And then the following week, you know, I get this thing on, because I don't necessarily like to read Variety a lot, but I read this thing called Screen International, and it's more interesting to me because it looks at how films perform around the globe, not necessarily just in the States with this skewed perspective.
You probably did better overseas.
No. The movie didn't do well, and it kicked off these series of articles about how, like, the global box office is in so much trouble.
Even with Chris in it, too.
And well. So I'm saying to myself...
Oh, sometimes, you know.
Yeah, sometimes, but... But here's the thing.
I'll come back to that, and I'll tell you why.
This is a movie This is a movie that is, like, version 4 in a franchise. Okay. That's a fucking tired thing. It's tired as shit. Mm-hmm. It was, in my opinion, it wasn't more than a sketch when they did the first movie. I was like, you took a sketch and pushed it out to a 2-hour movie. Mm-hmm. The first movie bored me.
Cause like, really?
There's not enough in this movie to me. Not enough in this movie for me to be interested to stay like part of it in terms of what the story's trying to do. Yes, the spectacle of it is what people are interested in, but that's not why I like to see movies like that. So I say to myself, okay, so you watch this movie and you're complaining about how people don't want to come see the movie, and it's like, you know, the big thing that made movies fascinating to me growing up is that I would see something that I'd never seen before. Mm-hmm. I still look at movies as the opportunity to show me something I've never seen before. Because television is all about repeating stuff. And it has to, because it's the nature of it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and this whole discussion about, well, movies are going away, and blah, 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 we can't sustain the business model. And I was like, because you've gotten to the point where you just want to show people these event films, which are so safe in type of storytelling. And part of the safety is, I got to show you something that you've already seen before. Why do I want to see something I've already seen before?
Mm-hmm. Like, unless...
Now, here's the thing about that movie.
Give me the same, but different, but from a different perspective.
That's what they think it is, because this is the thing about that movie, the Men in Black International. And it's checking off boxes, they think. White lead, black lead, black woman, and we're taking out so-and-so, we're putting in a woman who's the key woman in that, black director. They're just checking boxes to go, this is blah, blah, blah.
As opposed
As opposed to saying, let's go up to the top. Mm-hmm. Story, new, fresh. Oh no, it's not. It never can because it's version 4.
Throw it away.
Stop. Correct this. The first thing I saw when I saw this trailer was, fuck.
A Big Mac again.
Fuck. This is a waste of an interesting pairing. This is a pairing where, when I saw that the chemistry that Chris and Tessa had in Thor, I was like, "They, you know what? This could be another cool movie for them. I could see them in another cool movie." But but then again, that was movie 3 too. So what are they gonna do now? The sad thing that will happen is this great pairing that has this interesting type of chemistry on screen, we won't see it again, because what's gonna happen is their reps are gonna say, "Don't do this again. Don't work with him, and don't do this kind of thing because the last movie failed." And they're gonna say something
something about, you know, and they're gonna find all these reasons about why that movie failed, mm-hmm. and talk them out of doing another movie again together, mm-hmm. and you know, and we missed opportunity to see them some great because they did a fucking fourth movie as their next pairing, as opposed to show me a movie with those two together in it again with a story I've never seen.
I was thinking that they almost needed to come back with. Remember when they brought back, was a Batman, the dark one, the Chris.
Chris Nolan, yeah. Chris.
When they came back with that after coming off of those corny ass.
Yeah, those.
All of a sudden, it was like a whole nother movie. Almost like a darker, edgier version of Men in Black is like where I think they could have went.
They should have gone that way because the thing, you know, you're exactly right. Like that Batman. And Robin Forever, or maybe you should go Batman Forever, the one that Joel Schumacher did, mm-hmm. that basically destroyed the Batman franchise, mm-hmm. in the mid-90s. They had to wait 10 years before they brought it back.
And they had to wait so people could forget.
yeah. You know what?
Well, that generation sucked. Let's give it 10 years and we'll try it again.
They basically gave it 10 years and they said, how do we do this? And you're right. They said, let's make it darker. And I think the Men in Black thing...
You take the story serious.
You take it serious,
you don't make it popcorny... Summer Carnival, you make it a drama. Right. You make it into a grown-up Batman.
Totally agree.
That's true.
Because there was a movie that came out maybe 10 years ago called Invasion with Daniel Craig and Nicole Kidman. Mm-hmm. And it's about, you know, it's about this alien invasion thing. And it was, you know, and it's an invasion of the body snatchers thing. See, that's the thing about Men in Black is that if Men in Black was kind of played with the kind of intensity of that 70s Invasion of the Body Snatchers that has, mm-hmm. that has Donald Sutherland, that could have been a cool movie. But they're not going that way because they're like, gotta save the brand. Right. Gotta save the brand.
We gotta sell cute toys.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
We gotta. Now, let me ask you this, since we kind of went off topic a little bit, because I want to make sure that as a writer, because I know people get pushback, when writers are writing screenplays and we talk about checking off the boxes, like, okay, gay characters are the new hot thing. That's the new hotness. Let me just throw in some gay characters and make them gay for no damn reason. So talking about that, let me give an example of how it was done well that I like, and then you can tell me as writers, as we're writing, because, you know, we always talk about, well, you know, writers can be able to write whatever they want to write, but you got to get that nuance. You got to make sure that you don't make an ass out of yourself. Right. For example, there's a show on Netflix called, is it Borderlands?
Borderliner.
Mm-hmm. And basically, it's one of those, okay, y'all know I go through my international movie fate, and I love, like, detective crime stories, stuff like that. Real deep, gritty, detective-y, crimey, that kind of stuff. So right now, I have left Korea, and for the last 6 months, I have been residing in Northern Europe and watching shows from Sweden, you know, Denmark, all those things. So there's one, and I want to say it's Sweden. It might be Norwegian, but there's...
I just want to say, I advise everybody to do this, by the way. They make shows that...
We have me hooked.
Destroy us.
Yeah.
Dude,
you all the Berlins,
and I'd be upset because they don't make them fast enough, and they're not—they're only short. They only make like 10 episodes, and then I'm like 5 years.
But this is why. Okay, so
let me finish my point first, and we'll come back to you, and then we'll jump to you because I want you to jump on this too because there's another show that you were mentioning.
I know.
So in this show, like I said, we have this guy, good-looking guy. Not that I watch shows because people are good looking in it. I like the secrets.
It just ends that way.
I can be a professional.
Lisa, don't lie to me.
I can be a professional
and watch a movie with just regular looking people sometimes.
Never.
But I'm watching the show and great show. Like they got the crime. Like for example, he's like he comes back to his hometown. He's hanging out, visiting like his dad or his brother or something like that. I watch so many of them, they all kind of blend together. But anyway, from what I remember, so something happens where either his brother goes to a bar and then someone gets killed and they're trying to figure out who got murdered. And this guy kind of figures out that his family and his people had something to do with this. And he has to make a decision whether or not he's going to help, you know, keep them not getting busted, doing things like, oh, there's blood on here, but then not reporting it or something like that. You know, stuff like that.
Cover up the case.
So, you know, it's like that gritty stuff like, oh my God, this is like a moral dilemma. I like this guy, but, you know, I hate cops anyway, but, you know, sorry, but not the good cops are okay, but when you don't say nothing, that's when you're a bad cop too. But anywho, but I like that kind of gritty, like trying to figure it out. And then I think it's like maybe the second episode or something like that, where you don't know the guy is gay until he randomly hooks up with his lover. Mm-hmm. Like it's every regular thing, like most people do, you know, booty, 3 a.m. booty call, you up. Mm-hmm. You know, not even a conversation, like I'm going to come over. It's just like, you up? What you trying to do?
I know what you want.
What you trying to do? Okay. And here's the thing. I should not have been shocked. But it wasn't shocked in like, oh my God, what is this? It was shocked in a good way, where it's like, oh my God, this is such a regular dude.
Especially when they're a kick-ass dude.
Oh my God, he's doing all this. Right. And there's nothing, the stereotypical things that we always say as heteros that we look at that we consider people being gay. Right. Like it wasn't like, you know, the stereotypical
stuff.
There
were no signs.
There was no signs, you know. Right. It was like, oh my God. No, nothing. He was just a regular dude.
He didn't go,
oh my God, one of my relatives.
Then I'm like, I knew.
One of my relatives.
I knew it.
Wasn't no house music playing in the car, rolling through. It was nothing, you know, nothing. You know, no Frankie Knuckles in the background, like, ooh, girl. You know, nothing like that. But the normalcy of it was so beautiful, and then they just kept it right on moving. Yeah. And, you know, a part of me was kind of hurt because I was like, that means I have no chance with this character. He would totally not even look at me. Oh my God, we can only just be friends. Oh, all right, I love you anyway. But, you know, it was one of those shows, and I thought, this is how. This is the new normal. This is just regular.
Right.
And my question to you is when people are writing these things, it's like, it's all when we talk about with people, well, only black people can write certain roles for black people, or, you know, certain people can write it for those people. It's like, what are some of the things as writers, if we want to write a character that just happens to be gay, you know, how do we write them in TV shows and films where it doesn't come off false, fake, and like, oh my God, you were just checking the box off because, well, gayness is hot
so
now.
I mean, this is interesting because I have these two gay characters in this film I'm writing.
Yay.
And it's kind of a love story, and it's, you know, whatever. And I'm trying to say to myself, how do I write this? How do I write this? And the thing I'm saying to myself is, I'm not writing this story where I'm trying to take what becomes a problem, the way society views me as being gay, as the issue that they're dealing with. Mm. Something else that goes on in this. It's just like, okay, I'm just writing them as they're going to fall in love.
Right.
And it's just going to be like, there's not going to be these outside pressures and like everyone giving them the side eye and stuff like that, because that's like, you know, what's kind of expected.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to do something else with class involved in this, because there's a girl who's an immigrant and there's a girl who's not, and you know, the girl who's not has got a bunch of money, but there's this kind of like, so I'm addressing it that way instead of more not the fact that they're gay. And I'm just trying to say, like, that's how I just make it like every day. That's how I make it so it seems like it fits, so that it's more universal, because if you're a guy and you like a girl, there's things that can make that go wrong. If you're a guy and you like a guy, there's things that can make that go wrong. If you're a girl and you like a girl, there's things that can make that go wrong that are probably the same kind of like miscommunication or blah, blah, blah.
That fuck up any
relationship.
Right.
And that is not saying, I'm not trying to make their sexuality front and center.
Right.
And that's where I think people make the mistake is, it's like, how do I make this? The sexuality is front and center. And I think the mistake that people make when they've written stuff with gay characters, throwing them in or stuff like that, is it's like, it's, you wonder, is it like, is this the thriller like Basic Instinct, where that type of sexuality is like the thrust of the show, of that story? And if that's the thrust of your story, then you got to figure out how you make like the sexuality stuff work. But if you're doing a movie like that, or like Sea of Love, where there's a sexual crime going on, if you're not doing that, then why does it have to be front and center for, you know? And then, because everyone has these kind of like, because of their ignorance, they don't know, and because of their ignorance, they quickly go to the perversion side of things.
They demonize,
things they don't know about sexuality. It's just like the way certain white people depict black people on screen with the way they do sex. They're like, well, you know what? My assumption is this is how they're gonna do it, so I'm gonna see it like this. But that's not necessarily true. So that's not how you want to, like, you know, like, focus on that. I mean, yeah, you know.
Sorry, I just had a chuckle. I was thinking about Brokeback Mountain, and I always be like, who wrote this script? Because there was that scene where, the beautiful scene where they finally make love with each other, and he turns Jake around, and he goes, and he, you know, spits in his hand, and I'm like, that's supposed to work the first time? Somebody straight wrote this shit.
Yeah, that ain't gonna work the first time. That ain't gonna work the first time.
And there wasn't that much back breaking in there.
I apologize to all y'all out there.
Just visualize it.
Sorry, Stacey.
I'll talk unfiltered all the time.
All the kids in here. This been a grown folks.
Yeah. Look, I thought it, but I didn't want to say nothing.
See, yeah,
it's like, really? That's you only a little more now.
So.
That'll work.
But the thing is, I'm saying to myself, so that's what you got to do. I mean, I was telling Hilliard, I was telling
I'm
one.
Sorry,
like,
I'm still it's funny.
I go, picture this. Go ahead.
My God.
I gotta get some water.
Oh my God.
Well, I was just gonna say, why are you thinking?
No. So you talked about this show like Borderliner, and it's like, you know, it's, I don't know how long it's been, a year, close to a year ever since everyone watched the show Dogs of Berlin.
Right.
Dogs of Berlin, you know, I told everyone when we talked about it one time, but when you meet the main character in the opening scene, you
wait. What's the synopsis of it, really?
Okay,
quick?
So Dogs of Berlin is a modern day show. Cop show,
okay.
And it's about badass cop show, and it's basically about these two cops get paired together, and they have to solve the murder of this football player, a soccer player gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
The soccer player is like, he's like, you know, it'd be the equivalent of like if LeBron James was murdered.
What?
Damn.
Like, you know, in terms of like, he's like,
okay.
Like he represents that much of the nation, you know? And it's like,
you better not tell Rihanna.
Right. You know, and so it was fascinating. You know, the first 10 minutes, I mentioned before, the first 10 minutes is that you meet the lead character, you meet him, he's having sex with this woman, and then he sees this murder, or sees these crime lights outside of his window, and he's like, he's changing this baby, and he takes the baby to the crime scene, and you're like, okay, wait a minute, who the fuck is this motherfucker right here? But, and I told people that before, mm-hmm. but what unfolds more and more that makes the show most fascinating is he's an ex-neo-Nazi, right? And he's a cop, and he's doing all this thing, and the person that he has to solve the murder of, because he's Turkish, and Turks have a very combative experience in Germany. They're immigrants, and they get shit on and all this kind of stuff like that, and they're treated like a second. So it's kind of like it's like if a Klansman had to investigate the murder of a black guy. How much?
Now he's kind of in between.
He's okay.
In between.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. He's reformed. He's reformed from that. But you kind of like.
But is he really? No.
Exactly.
That's the question. You asking yourself that the whole time. Right, like, right. Is he really?
And he's corrupt as fuck.
Okay. Yeah.
He's fuck.
Yeah.
And it's just dope about exactly. It. So dope about it. And then they pair him with this Turkish guy because they're like, well, if it's a Turkish guy, that means that you got to go into these Turkish no-go zones where the white Germans can't go. So let's put you with the Turkish guy. And the Turkish guy turns out to be gay. And you don't even know that's like his is. I mean, he's like shooting people and busting everyone's ass. Mm-hmm. He's this badass dude. And you meet his lover and you're like, oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And what's fascinating is the.
And it's a beautiful relationship.
It's a beautiful
relationship.
And also what's really dope is that when the police captain has to figure out how to like keep this kind of murder and stuff like under the right PR thing, and he knows I gotta get the Turkish guy to pair with the cop on the thing. He goes to the head of the police to talk to, you know, that person's house to talk to them to get the okay.
Mm-hmm.
He knocks on the door and there's a woman there, and she's like, and the guy says, I need to see you know the captain or whatever, the chief. And you go in and the chief is a woman, and she's doing exercises, and you realize, oh, that was her wife.
Right.
So the chief of police in Germany is this lesbian relationship, and there's nothing, and it's not even like, there's no attention to it. It's just,
no attention to
boom,
it.
There it is, and their discussion about what it is like, it's not that the guy's gay, that they're putting a gig on it. Because like,
they started late.
Right.
They didn't go the day that we first meet her.
Right, yeah. Right.
Like, no, bitch,
right,
we've already been living like this.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it just was like, and the thing that's interesting about this show is that where the issue about his homosexuality becomes a play is when he has to interact with the Turkish people in the show, because Turkish people, they're Muslim, and they have a very
Yeah, where they're from, you get caned and killed.
Or like that. And you know, and they took that same kind of like revulsion for it to Germany. Yeah. And so he's kind of like, how do I fucking make this work? Right. And there's just and the main guy they're after, you find out that like that his fiance used to be the girlfriend of the gay cop, and when he was hiding, and just like and it all because it's so
and
dope.
It's not and
it's so
and
dope.
It also breaks the whole token trope too, yes.
Right?
The one like the one black person,
it's full
the
of
one
tokens.
Gay person,
yeah, no, it's,
and they're
it's,
gay people, and
a lot
not,
of them are bad
gay.
Guys, though.
Right.
But it's full of them.
Yeah.
And they're not necessarily connected to each other. Like, it's not like, oh, it's the gay people, but they happen to be a couple.
Right.
It's like,
right.
this is a totally different person.
Right.
Not connected to this gay person. It's just everyday
That's
life.
That's one with a whole...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
don't give away the plot.
No.
And I think,
no,
and I want to say,
you
I think
see that show. You have to see that.
And
show.
I also think it's the reason why Pose is so popular and people have getting praise because the first season, like for the first 3-episode arc, it immerses you in that world. Mm-hmm. You know, and for people who don't know anything about trans people or get or bulk, all that stuff, you're like, oh my God, what is this? But then
you
it just
and I grew up.
Child, that please.
So
that's like cousin down the street.
Exactly.
Like y'all need some extras. I can call her right now. She go, girl, get over here and get your shit. Come on, put the wigs in the car. Just go. But it's like you see the show, but now it's the latter part of the season, and then we're getting into the new season. Their sexuality is not an issue.
No.
It's about regular family stuff. When you see Mother Bianca, she just wants to support her kids. Why you ain't in school? Why I need you to do this?
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the sexuality. Oh my God, you got two young teenagers who are having sex. They're just two young teenagers.
Right.
You know? You have all, I want to be in love. I want to, they just, it's just regular people shit. And I think they've done it really well in crafting it so that you get like the big dancing. And people love all that anyway. We love all the theatrics. But now
I need
I think,
to tell Stephen though, they need to turn the music down when he's like, when Billy is talking and it is.
Listen.
Yeah, it drives me. I can't hear him.
We need to hear.
That's how it is in a bowl.
Damn it, bitch. I want to hear him.
Stephen.
Sometimes
friend,
he's moving
friend
his
to the
story
show.
Forward.
Friend
though.
To the podcast. No. Stephen, we need Pray Tell's mic.
I'm going to call him
and say, up that mic.
Yeah.
But I think, and not only is that, but it's the fact that you've got
turn
so many.
Down, bitch.
They
can be in there pretending, bitch. They can be
you can mock it. Pretend.
But we need to.
Pantomime.
You can pantomime. Just do what you got to do. But now the show, you know, now we're just getting into like regular stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
family shit.
Just it's family.
Yeah.
It really is a family.
Right.
When I tell people this, because my mother is hooked on it.
Mm-hmm. September.
Oh, sorry.
Do you really?
Sorry. No, I'm trying to find something.
It's a family show. When I tell people, how do you describe Pose? Oh my God, Chris, I'm going to stab you right here. I'm going to stab you with this donut.
Stab me. Go ahead.
It's a family drama. And like literally, I had to tweet out to Billy Porter because my mom asked because I got my mom hooked on the show and she's been seeing Billy Porter. All the fabulous gowns, the suits, like she's been watching all the TV talk shows
I'm
he's been on. But she, this is my mom asked me. She goes, and like when I get a chance to see her, I'll show her his new outfit. Like, she goes, oh my God, did you see him? He was on this show, The Real. He was on this. And did you see it? Like, my mother loves it.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with him being a gay actor, wonderful thing. It's about him being a fabulous character, a fabulous dresser. And she wanted me to ask, does he have any all purple outfits? Because my mother loves purple. So I tweeted out to him. My mom wants to know, she's 76. She wants to know, do you have any pictures of yourself going to the end of the events in an all purple. So Billy Porter, if you're ever listening, please, my mom needs to know. And if you do, let me know. That way I can look online or tweet it to me so I can show my mom the all purple outfit.
Shout out to Stephen and them. How are they going to drop episode 1 and get season 3 picked up immediately?
I'm going to tell you why.
That's when you know.
No, let me tell you why.
What are these numbers?
Listen, I'm going to tell you why.
Pick it up.
Let me tell you why.
Exactly.
That fucking cast is incredible.
They really are.
That cast is incredible.
The writing is
really good. And like I tell people, casting is everything. And the fact that you cast real folk.
Real folk.
Real.
Brings that nuance
Angel
we talk
Bench.
About it. Yes. That nuance, that realness.
The thing about it is, the thing is, look.
And it's a family show, people. Yes.
Well,
it's
a
family show.
The nuance in it is this, is that the the people.
No, it is. It's really, it's family dynamics.
Look, those actors are able to draw upon stuff from their own life in a way. I mean, look, that's what every actor has to do anyway, you know, and that's part of their research to figure out just to make the character come alive. But you know, like there's only so much time in the day and you only have, you know, but I don't know, a few months to prepare a character on a movie or something like that, less on a TV show. And it's like, you know, how much do you have to draw upon? Right. And it's kind of like a shorthand to draw upon people who actually live that life, mm-hmm. because they're like, you know what, I got.
They're like composites of themselves.
Yeah, but it's like I got 20 years of like of behavior that I've seen that mm-hmm. I can just draw on or tell you, mm-hmm. hey, right. to another actor or to the writer or to the director, hey, you know, what if we did this because I saw this when I did this, and mm-hmm. and if you're just smart collaborator, you're like, cool, let's do that. I mean, I think the issue is that I just thought about this now. I mean, is that like it's one of the things that you see in a lot of stuff is, you know, when people are doing black projects, it's like I think they see it as show me why your blackness is everything, and therefore, you know, like everything about you is to come from your blackness, mm-hmm. and then it's like show me everything about you being gay, and because that's such a sexual, there's a different sexuality that everyone thinks that is your main thing.
Absolutely. And it's right. people. Yeah. I don't ever think about being gay. Do you think about being gay, Jason?
Well,
I mean, not in a normal.
Yeah.
It doesn't cross my mind. Thing
right. But there are certain black people who they right. and hard obviously when you're black is that it's hard not to be reminded that you're black all correct. The time. So therefore, it becomes this predominating thing right. that
is. Which is why they think it's a choice for us.
Yes.
Is that we chose to, then like, I wish I could just choose that shit.
You know,
you know what I mean?
So to me, I mean, that's what I think about why Poe's an interesting show is like, it's the family thing. It's not mm-hmm. necessarily about them like struggling with trying to be gay because mm-hmm. that's not the struggle. It's not it's the true. Struggle for them. Yeah. It's not true. The main thing in their life either. It's not. It shouldn't mm-hmm. be the main thing in your life all the time. You know, like your sexuality does not dominate everything that you do every day, no matter who you are, you know, it just doesn't.
And I think that's why.
And it's bad storytelling mm-hmm. because, mm-hmm. We obviously think about sex a lot, no matter who you are, you think about it every day, but it's like, it's almost like, don't tell me that story because we all want to think, because we're all thinking about that. That's not a good story because right. it's so universal.
What I think about is when people usually think about adding in a gay character or someone else, I feel like they approach it as why do we need someone gay or like where could we put like that's their main if they wrote a character description gay would be part of it instead right, of right. you know badass who loves babies and pets dogs but kicks children and whatever and then happens to
ooh,
be
and they
gay.
Kick children I like this yeah. character already
that's my cousin girl
you know you don't act right you gonna get this foot I know you're two get it together
I know you're
baby kill. Huey get it together
you. I was thinking about something about how sometimes I was thinking about like Tu Wong Fu. If you guys remember that.
Yes.
Thanks for everything. Julianne Moore?
Yes, Julianne Moore. The original Catwoman.
It reminded me of like Patrick Swayze's character and even Wesley Snipes' character, which I think he was wrongly cast for the most part. But they all ended up having a chemistry. I think they worked.
They did have the chemistry.
But and I think it's just mainly he's just such a big guy. It just looked awkward to me. But that's not a good reason. He's a good actor though. So where I'm going with that is Patrick's character in particular had strong agency. He was the older one who'd been through it all. Mm-hmm. So he dealt with the bigots and the, you know, the assholes and the people who wanted to fight you and slap you and beat you up. So he would fight you back. Mm-hmm. He had that thing about him that everybody was like could root for him. So he helped John Leguizamo's character become like that. He mm-hmm. didn't have any agency at first.
Right.
But eventually he gathered it and became mm-hmm. just like one of them would fight back. Mm-hmm. You know, he had to learn how to do that. And so where I'm going with that is one of the things that I like about where it's going now, we're talking about these Berlin shows. It's like all the German shows just say something Berlin. So all you do is go on Netflix and look at Berlin and you'll find all these cop shows we're talking about. Anyway, and so I like where we're going now. We were talking about the panel. We had guys from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and why am I going to blank on all the rest of
Arrow.
The shows? Arrow, all the shows. But they all have characters.
Batgirl.
The new Batgirl, which we're really looking forward to seeing. I think that's going to be huge. But you notice it's all DC shit.
Yeah,
it all it's all DC, right?
Yeah.
You know,
well, Greg Berlanti.
It's all Berlanti. I mean, just a quick on that is that, you know, like I was at, I mean, The thing about Marvel is that they're kind of in a weird space with what they can do on television because the studio, the mm-hmm. film studio, wants access to everything. Right. And it's the things that they decide not to have access to for probably creative reasons, like we can't make anything live out of that, mm-hmm. is what they'll say to the TV people, this is what y'all can do. Mm. You know, because there wasn't going to be a Jessica Jones movie.
Right.
It just was like, mm-hmm. like, what is that? Right. There's not enough dynamics to make that work on a film. Same thing with like, you know, Punisher. They did a couple of Punisher movies. They've never...
Luke Cage.
I had pitched on that 10 years ago.
They should have done a movie.
I had a pitch on that 10 years ago that would have fucked everyone's head up. I don't know why.
They weren't ready.
They weren't. Yeah. They really weren't. They, you know what? They wouldn't. They're not ready now for what I want to pitch for that. So... but yeah, that's the thing with Marvel. The DC stuff, they're able. It's interesting you say that because I was talking to someone about Marvel stuff in the mid 80s, in the early 80s, there was a comic called Alpha Flight that Marvel did. And there was a character, there was these twins in there. There was this, it's called North Star and Aurora. Mm-hmm. And North Star, I believe, was the first like openly gay character in comics.
Really?
Yeah. And I always thought it was fascinating because I was kind of like, it's kind of like a bold choice to like do that, you know. And I'm like a teen, I'm reading this. I'm like, that's really, you know, because you're aiming this at teens. But then I'm also saying to myself, this is an offshoot of the X-Men, and you're doing this because X-Men is all about trying to like is an inclusion and trying to like, you know, be an analog for outsiders and stuff like that. So it actually makes perfect sense because the comic readers be like, well, where's my character? Where's the guy that represents? Like my experience, and they give it to them, you know. And it wasn't for a long time before you saw anyone else who would be open like that. I think it was just, recently they did it with Iceman, but it was like that. I think was like, I mean, you want your large, you know, like smorgasbord of people around because
I was just thinking about something. you guys know I'm still huge fans of Fear the Walking Dead and Walking Dead.
Sorry.
And there have been on both shows they've had lead characters who were gay.
Over the season
or so, they would, you know, their boyfriends or girlfriends or whatever, well, usually their boyfriends would be killed.
And the excuse would always be, well, there's nowhere for their story to go.
Bullshit. And what happens is then you go 4 seasons, they never fall in love again. You know, they don't deal with them being
that was
gay.
Their one moment.
You got it.
Even
you
know in the apocalypse of zombies, exactly. You get one shot.
Exactly. They keep coming across groups of people. And I'm like, no one ain't else nobody.
Gay. It was gay.
Ain't nobody else.
Yeah. They all died. They all been thrown
and,
in
and the world is upside down, so all things are different now.
And they'll do little things with somebody who might be lesbian or something like.
Yeah.
But they don't dive in. They never show the real moment, and I don't know if it's because it's the network it's on.
It's a pushback.
Which I doubt.
I think it's pushback. It's like the one I can't remember who it was.
Or
who
if
said
it's because
it.
The writer's in a room.
I think it might be the EPs.
In there fighting.
Look, it probably the EPs. Like the one who was it that was on the panel that had said that they suggested make the gay character make this, and they were like, let's make this, and they were like, why?
Right.
You know, and trying to fight, and then you couldn't really fight for it because you're a newbie writer, and it's like that's the main thing. Because right now I feel like. I don't want this just to be a niche thing. Like, this is the new hot thing, and then we're going to go back to business as usual. Mm-hmm. In my gut, I don't think it is, because I just think there's just so much content and things that are coming out. I mean, with the elevation of Moonlight doing so well a couple of years ago, stuff that's just being said. What was the other movie last year that was big about a boy? Or what was
Love, Simon?
Love, Simon was
Love
one.
Simon,
and then
about a boy.
Is it about a boy? No, the one with the... The one that was nominated.
I think I know who you're talking about.
The one that you liked.
I'm going blank. I'm sorry. I know what you're talking about, but I'm going
blank. Okay, anyway. So we're getting these films, and the content I'm hoping is not about their sexuality or the stories that come out. Oh, my God, we didn't know you're gay. This is a terror. I don't want that to be the plot point, the thing that they got to, like, travel through. It just needs to be good stories. They happen to be gay.
To me...
More black gay people.
To me, the
gay people in general, but black people in particular.
Black people of color, too.
About the gay person coming out... is kind of as tired as like a civil rights show or like a slavery show. It's like, unless you have some really, really fascinating take on it, I don't want to see it.
Like Moonlight. And I think that's why Moonlight is so effective for me.
Yeah. Completely. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know.
And like I told y'all remember when I saw it and I walked outside and I tweeted, I said, I just saw the Oscar winner, y'all. And I'm going to tell you the scene.
I said the same thing.
I cried. And I got my phone out. I said, y'all, let me tell you about Moonlight. And I'm going to tell you the scene that got it. This is the Oscar winning moment right now.
Let's see if we have the same scene.
You know, do you know what scene I'm talking about? Wait, I'm going to see if you guess. Can you guys guess what scene it is?
I can guess.
Okay, everybody hold your guess what the scene is. Everybody hold it.
But don't we have to say it?
Do you have to say
it? You ain't saying Moonlight.
You haven't seen...
You got
Get
to
out.
It's okay. It's too late. The moment has passed. It's too late now. It's not going to be the same. It's not going to be the same. Okay. All right, so you guys hold the moment, and then all you got to do is say, yeah, that was it. So for me, this is the Oscar... This is the Oscar-winning moment, and one of the rare black coming-of-age, coming-out stories that was interesting and different and fresh was with Mahershala telling him about the word faggot.
Mm. Ooh.
And he said, am I this? He says, you know, that's not something you need to know. That's a word that they use to hurt people. Mm-hmm. Right then and there. Mm-hmm. When they have to shot a little boy, and then they pan over to Janelle Monáe, and she kind of gives him that look like, you ain't got to go that far. This is, we'll take it to baby steps. And then Mahershala, and I'm like, fuck, he should have. That's the moment right there. Mm. For me, that was the moment.
Okay,
that wasn't my moment.
That wasn't my moment either.
Which is good.
Which is good.
There were a lot of them.
Look at how many moments there are that we all had a different one.
That's the same thing. In terms of dialogue, in terms of the crystallization of what this was, that was it.
To me, the moment was the scene at the end with your boy from the Nick. What's his name? Andre Holland. Yeah. When he says Andre Holland, something like, you know, no one's touched me like this before.
Yeah. This is one of my moments, too. Yeah.
The minute I saw that, I was like, oh, that's the damn movie. Mm-hmm. Because the difference between that scene and the scene you're saying, I mean, I don't know, to me, is I was kind of like, that could be for anybody. Their circumstance could be.
We've never seen a black gay character do that moment.
We've never seen that. We've never seen
that. And a homeboy.
Lower class, working class.
Yeah. Right, and an OG talking to him like a person.
Yeah. Yes.
But you know what I mean? But that's, like you said, that's why that movie's fascinating, because that movie was showing us these moments, these scenes, a lot that were like, you've never seen that.
What was yours?
Yeah, that was right.
It was somewhere in there. I was thinking it was either, I had two. One that hit me was the moment, it was somewhere in the end between those two when they were at the cafe and they were sitting having that conversation that led them to go home. There was just some beautiful moments in there that I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's good.
And,
it's really
and,
good.
And the scene for me that made me know that they were, I don't know if they were going to get the Oscar, but that I knew it was going to blow up was when he was in class and he,
he switched.
Smashed the kid.
I love the switch.
Dude's ass.
I was like,
and
wow.
You see that run all the way through the hall, and I was like, you know what I mean?
That was a crazy scene.
So for me, we could keep going.
Yeah. There's so many.
Okay? His mother had moments. You know, come on, you know.
The scene where she's just sitting there, and she's, you don't hear nothing, and it's the colors, and she was just going off.
Right there.
You know, since you want that scene,
you better go see that movie.
Wait, Chris. Damn.
Say one thing. The scene with the mom, this is so off topic. But the scene with the mom is so interesting. I think that Barry was saying that, like, he shot that one way, and in the movie he played it in reverse. Like the sequence is her in reverse because it's like the way that he wanted that to feel, like it was
like a child who doesn't know.
He's kind of played it backwards. And I don't know, I love that.
What was yours?
All right, speak now. Speak if ever hold it.
Thank you.
Don't forget the fan.
Whoosh. Actually, Chris is my favorite. Actually, my scene, I remember it so vividly, and I remember how terrified I was. That's the moment I was terrified when I was looking at it, was when they actually were on the beach, when the two boys were on the beach coming out. That moment was like, it was so real for me. It was too real that I was.
Because you were
like,
there with him.
Yeah.
He shot it, and he stayed there. Like a lot of people would have cut. Mm-hmm. He was like, I'm staying right there.
Yeah.
Right.
I didn't know what to do.
Right.
But see, that is something that I, you know, we had that panel yesterday about the directing, and that's the one thing that I'm still, I always lament the fact that people think that we're on the verge of, like, the movies are disappearing the way we know them. Is that that type of editing is so what you would not see in television.
Exactly.
Like television is afraid to let images like stick.
Let the audience just sit with that. And because of that, and I remember I went, because I saw it like three times in a theater. And then the third time I took my sister to go see it. Because she said, what is this movie? I said, girl, let me just tell you. Let me go. We are going. And like, I picked her up, threw in the car, took her to the thing, got her the good popcorn, fed her up good, buttered her up, got the good liquor. And she said, when the movie is done, and like, she, you know, my sister's like, you know, she gets emotional about stuff, but not really publicly too much. And I can see she's going to tear up. And she goes, I felt like I was intruding on a very intimate moment. That's how she felt the whole time
during
the
movie.
She said, and it was exactly that moment. She said, because, you know, Lisa, when we watch movies, a lot of times I used to like, you know, they cut here, they cut here. She says, I felt almost guilty watching them in certain scenes because I felt like the camera was on them for so long. I felt like I was crowding their moment. I felt like I was there.
That's the power of film. You know what? It's like I was watching something the other day and I was like,
I have it at home, Kim, if you want to borrow it.
It's on Netflix.
I'm sitting here watching. I'm watching something the other day and I was kind of like, why are they cutting so much? Why? I was watching that show, The Night Manager.
Young people, ADHD, that kind of fast, that hit fast,
it's
happening.
It's not even that, because the thing about Moonlight is that the Moonlight is geared for this audience thing, and when I'm watching like Night Manager, which is kind of like a more like prestige drama, so they're not trying to like make it for people who are under 30 kind of thing. There's something about when you watch something on a smaller screen that you that you can't focus as much. I bring this up because there's an article in Friday's New York Times about, you know, like in the interview of all these great people about like the what's the fate of movies right now, and there was a story where Barry Jenkins was like, you know, I hate to be this nostalgic guy, but there's something about when you shoot the movie and you play it on the large screen. And he was saying, you know, because they shot Moonlight on like the 65 millimeter Alexa thing, right? So there's a big negative to it, you can blow it up really big. But he was saying that the story that which he related, which I never heard, it's interesting to tell this, is that when they were showing the movie at DC, they were showing it at the Museum of African American History or something like that, and there was a fire, and they had to leave the theater quickly, but they didn't want to cancel the screening, so they went across the street to screen it in the Smithsonian at the IMAX theater in the Smithsonian, and he was like, there was nothing that he had ever thought he would ever see, to see Regina King on that big IMAX screen, just filling everyone's like whole like vision. That woman's face. He was like to see a black woman's face that big and hold on it that long is something that is rare, and that is what you will never have in television. And that's like, you know, it's the weakness that people have with not going to the movies could be because it's too much money. So they should maybe change the way the pricing is. But that is why movie is so like film. So those scenes in Moonlight that we're talking about, even though it's a really really small movie, he shot it with a type of scope that, you know, this emotional scope that we get into it, and we're behind. Like you said, we're intruding in this space, and that's where that movie's it was so well deserved with all the accolades that it got.
Yes. I think there's one show actually that they did do a hold for a specific reason. It was 13 Reasons Why, very graphic scene, but it's when she is, spoiler, raped, and they hold on her face.
Oh, in the pool.
In the pool. And they just sit there. And I remember even me closing my eyes. I'm like, no. Over my eyes, still happening. Close my eyes. Over my eyes, still happening.
Sounds like irreversible. Irreversible.
Yep. And they said that the reason why they did that, to show you, like, when this happens, you want it to be over, but it's still happening. Exactly. It's still happening.
Yeah.
It's
still happening.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, you know, folks out there, you know, whether you're a gay writer or you're writing gay characters, kind of think about some of the things we talked about. You know, I don't want to see tokenism of gay characters putting them in. I want to see a variety of gay folks, not just white middle-class gays living happily and having their lattes and brunches and adopting children whenever they feel like it.
I think look at your intention.
Exactly.
Why are you doing it? I think that's what happens a lot.
Right.
As a script analyst, I read a lot of scripts, and a lot of scripts, I can so tell that you're just plugging in a woman or plugging in something else for popularity, and it doesn't belong, and it feels weird, and it looks weird, and even had people who literally forgot to change all the he's to she. And I'm like, so you obviously definitely, and like they'll say certain things and do certain things. I'm like, so it's pretty clear you just had a guy, probably got denied and then changed it all to a woman.
Oh, make it a woman.
Failed at doing all of it.
They forgot to find the find button and replace all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Let that be a lesson, children.
Yes, but my thing is that the laziness of writers when they want to, they're like, you know what? You're not realizing that, particularly now, if you're going to write a movie, then you know you got to give some, you have to kind of like break through so much inertia to have it be, you know, denied or sent to Netflix. So you better do the work. And if you're going to change the character, you just don't do the replace all. You got to go in there and say in every scene, is this what a woman would do?
And how check, is she going to check it? Like Jasani said, check like, your intention. Why are you writing it? Are you the person to be writing it? So, Hilliard, thanks yes, for letting awesome. Me talk about it, for you being on that panel and making me want to like kind of bring attention to something that, you know, people are here and they want
to
see.
I was
going
to say
stuff.
One last thing. I mean, to some extent, almost just don't make them any different, if that makes
thank
any
you.
Sense.
Thank you.
You know what I mean? Just because they're black don't mean they have to have the of,
just regular.
You know, yo and all
regular,
the things. You know,
regular folks.
Look,
regular,
I think
regular
it would,
folks.
I think it would be interesting. I honestly think it would be interesting if someone did a movie like Basic Instinct that was about a gay character. Mm-hmm. It was a cop, and it was a gay cop, and the murderer was gay, like that, like the, you know, like that could be an interesting thing, because it's like, but you have to have the right person kind of approach it, you know, because because when that movie came out, everyone was like, what the fuck, all that sex is so hyper, and you know, stabbing in the beginning and on top, it's just like, wow, what the fuck, like that was such an intense story. And I think if you just made it gay, you know, then it's like, but you have to lean into it so hard, because that is a very specific movie about like a sexual thriller, which we don't see much of anyway, like anywhere.
And the ones they do try, they suck. Like they just, they're not part of that life or world or don't really know, and it's just sensationalism and not story. So
okay,
I'll say on it.
Thank y'all. Okay, cool episode, y'all. That was fun. Where you at, Jasani Drew?
I've been a little off Instagram because it's depressing me, but if you're gonna find my Instagram, it is Visionary Alignment. But on Twitter, I'm more active, Jasani Drew, spelled J-E-S as in Sam, as in Apple, and as in Nancy, I-D-R-E-W.
Okay,
thank you.
Where's the fan? I thought I'd have to.
I would, but I don't want the wind to hit.
Okay,
the
there you
mic,
go.
But there it is.
We need to be punctuated.
Chris, there, where you at?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram. I haven't been on either a lot in the last month or two, 3 months actually. But it's Unauthorized CBD on both.
Do you guys not get your notifications?
I don't think mines are turned on because I'm missing.
Because I'm always sending people stuff or whatever, and I never hear.
I'll have to, you know what? I'll have to, because I've been on my burner account. I need to go back and check and make sure, because I know when I started another account and had that, and I go over, I feel like I'm missing stuff because people are like, oh, I thought I sent you. I'm like, so I need to go check. So.
Well, I would tell you, my notifications are turned off. I don't have notifications turned
sorry.
Off.
Sorry.
I mean, when I check, well, the first thing I do when I go online is on Twitter, I check to see the little bell, like who's been saying whatever. I mean, I always do that just because I can't get the phone. It's too much phone chatter for me. Right. It'd break my concentration.
No, interesting. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just curious, because sometimes I'll like promote the show and I don't hear from you guys for 2 days and I'm like, did I send it to them? I think I did.
That's because I ain't been on. That's because I ain't been on for 2 days. And I'm going to be on. Cool. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So where you at?
I'm at Unauthorized CBD on Dope Both.
And I am on What Fresh Hell Is This?
And what's your burner name again?
My burner. Well, I'm creating a new one. No, I'll tell you the new burner one. It's going to be called Black Medusa. But that account is just, it's only going to, because I just want to do some fun stuff with Twitter. So it's going to be called Black Medusa, unless someone has that name, and it'll be Black Medusa 2.
You better buy it now. Get it.
But
now,
basically, it's like, you guys know I love Medusa. So it's just going to be a website, not website, but, you know, me tweeting stuff that has to do with Medusa, the history of it, and things I think a real life Black Medusa would say in pop culture, but you know, like the artwork, the things that I really like, literature, things like that, because I feel like it's such an iconic character and I love it, and I want to promote it. So as soon as I check to make sure no one has that, it'll be called Black Medusa.
Awesome. And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter @HilliardGuest. You guys can follow the show, Screenwriters RR, on Twitter. any questions, screenwritersrantroom@gmail.com. Please go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review. We need that for the metrics. iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, all that shit. Please follow us on our what, Chris?
On our Patreon page, per a note from a longtime fan listener, the link for the Patreon page and the link for the t-shirt, first thing in the show notes.
Okay, good. Yeah,
so
let's just do it.
First thing. So okay, the people who've been wanting something will have no excuse.
You been taking notes today?
I've been taking notes. Oh,
oh, you're doing it on your notepad.
Yeah,
today.
That's right.
Oh, I was
like,
I'm thinking you online looking
no,
shit
no,
up.
I was trying to find some of the link. That's what that thing was, and it kept, how do I fucking, so yeah.
Exactly. Big shout out. We had a couple of the young writers hanging in with us today. Thank you, everybody who hung in. I'm about to say Jennifer Santi. Jasani Drew, Stacy. Stacy, forgive me, what's your last name? Sir, Stacy Hawkins, Kim Alsop. We appreciate y'all. Thank y'all for hanging out with us. Y'all want to yell out y'all Twitter just so people know who we are?
At Lavender House.
At Lavender House.
At Lavender House.
Stacy Hawkins, where you at, Kim?
Oh, come close.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm at Creative K.
Creative K. All right, that's what's up.
Okay.
So everybody join me with us. You know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, everybody?
Wakanda forever.
Peace, y'all.
I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Rant Room. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the Rant Room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the craft of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Rant Room.